What's up, everyone, and thank you for tuning into episode 54 of the Bonus Point Rugby Podcast, this podcast that features hosts that traveled halfway around the world and still want to talk about rugby in the Pacific. So I'm your host, TJ Olsen. I'm back with the one and only Tevita Halafia. What's going on, brother?
What's happening? We're back, baby. Episode 54. Let's go!
Man, it's been good to have you back. I've had a few guests that have just been popping in and out. I had a Super Rugby 03 champion, then I had a Black Ferns World Cup champion. I was like, I still just want to shoot the shit with them and just have a chat about Super Rugby. You
know, all the great rugby experience in the world can't give you as much shit talk like this guy right here.
he's an expert, ladies and gentlemen.
Look, mate, put me on the sideline and shit. Whoever you want me to derail, I'll do it. I'll get there.
I know. Literally 10 people who are just in the back of my head right now. I'm sitting there just like picturing their faces going, no, Hala, no.
And he's like, don't say that. It's like, well, I'm going to. Don't bring me. Do you want me to support your team? Yes. Yeah. Well, this is how I show support, guys.
You get the good and the bad. You get both sides.
You know, I think the problem too is that I actually have a pretty good rugby IQ and a good rugby brain. So when it's not even personal insults. It's just like I'm breaking down what I'm watching. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, digging at their soul, you know, to the point where they're just like, I can't. Well, you're right, aren't I? I was like, well, yeah.
it'd be different if you were a Muppet on the sideline that would just be screaming something and had no idea what you're talking about. But at least you got the facts to back it up.
Look, I'm the has-been that never was. So I've just got a chip on my shoulder. And so I just take it out on everyone. I've taken out on everyone for the last 15 years, you know.
Man, if that wasn't a good intro, strap yourselves in, everyone, because we got a few things to talk about on this episode.
Oh, my.
Because there's been a few crazy things that have happened over the past couple of weeks. So we'll go through it one by one just before we start get into it. So Brad Thorne announcing that he'll be leaving the Reds at the end of the Super Rugby Pacific season.
Yep.
We also have Roger Tuivasa-Sheck announcing he'll be heading back to the Wawas in the NRL, leaving the Blues. Chiefs getting another win over the weekend and remaining undefeated. So that's a whole bunch, but the thing I want to start with, something very near and dear to both of our hearts, involves women's rugby. Mm-hmm. Super W regular season has ended, and we got the semifinals kicking off this weekend.
Back end of the season, baby. This is what I'm here for. And you know what? Like, you know that we're big fans because obviously we have to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch games. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be honest. I've slept through a few Super Rugby Pacific matches. Haven't missed a Super W match.
Because they're either at like 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night for us, so it's good stuff.
It's great, So, yes, back end of the season, I think the only time I ever support New South Wales, I'm backing them to go the whole way. They're going to remain undefeated, and they're going to put a stamp on the playoffs this week, I think.
Ooh, okay, all right. I want to pause that for a second because I want to chat about the Reds and the Brumbies first, and I want to swing back to that because I feel like if I let you go now, the passion is just going to overwhelm you, and I feel like we're just going to go through it. But
and I just won't care about the Reds or Brumbies game. Let's be honest.
All right, well, let's get through that one first. So we saw these two teams go head-to-head, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I think over Easter long weekend. It was a neck-and-neck contest, but what are you most looking forward to most in this matchup?
Yeah, I just think it's going to be the coaching style and direction each coach wants to play for this game. My gut tells me that the Brumbies forward pack could have a bit of a one-up on the Reds. Pardon me. Having said that, I think Reds are just their whole outfit's very impressive, and I think they'll bring it home pretty quickly from about that 50th minute in the second, you know. But it'll be interesting. I'm really looking forward, yeah, like I said, to seeing what the coaches are going to do. Obviously, we know a couple of those coaches involved with both teams, so I'm really interested to watch that. And I'm also looking forward just to see how the players react to, you know, only playing a couple weeks ago and then you're back in it for, you know, getting to the big dance. And, you know, we both understand and know that, you know, round robin games compared to playoffs is completely different. So I'm looking to see improvement on both teams' behalves. I thought that while that game was a cool game to watch, I thought their performances weren't the best for 80 minutes. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how that changes and the mindset changes of the players.
I think you hit nail on the head. I think that the Reds do have a very solid collective as a team. So I think if they're able to play together as a unit, I think they'll be pretty hard to beat. But I think one player for me on the Brumbies that really set the tone early was Amy Rule. She had a lot of big carries and set up a lot of good meters for their tries on the back end. I think they 100%. Had a solid offensive engine from her. And I think it shows in the stats, their offensive carries, I think they had about 20 more than the Reds. But the thing that let them down was I think they had 50% more missed tackles than them. The penalties in the ruck were a big issue. And they have to be smart with their kicking game because the Reds were able to combat it with a lot of charge downs, which led to a try in the end.
100%.
But Reds, you sent me the video today on Instagram. It was the cross-field kick to Shannon Perry, and then she's off to the races.
Oh, well, this just beautiful to watch, isn't it? I mean, I don't like saying this because I don't think we need to keep saying it, but the improvement in the rugby development for juniors and women's, you're seeing it exponentially now, especially with the Super W teams. And, you know, we're witnessing just greatness week in, week out, and I'm here for it, and I enjoy it way too much.
I think if the Reds opt to use their line out as well, I think that'll probably be the one thing that'll kind of just put them, like, topple them over the edge, because I think they had a few.
Yeah, look, yeah, I agree. I think the Reds have the more experience, you know. They're not going to shy away from that at all. I just think they need to sharpen up. With that experience, there was a lot more I was expecting, and I just don't. And to be fair, I think this season, maybe once I've seen them get to their actual potential against the Waratahs. But we'll see, because, you know, if that Brumbies forward pack can out-muscle, then that's going to cause a bit of drama for the Reds.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. But let's get to chatting about the one that we know that you're frothing at the mouth to talk about, the Fijiana Drua, which is probably going to be one of the best matchups in the season. I know the Tars are the odds-on favourite to win it, but we know how successful this Fijiana team has been in the past. I know that they were able to beat the Waratahs in last year's title decider. But the big reason that Fiji's lost their games this season was just ill discipline on their part. We saw, I think, in the last matchup against them, I think Tawake, their captain, was the one that got carded. And then they had another one of their players get yellow carded. So they were just done and dusted. But what do you think the Tars have to do to stay on top of this Fijiana side?
Look, what I will say in regards to that is both the men and women's Drua teams, they play perfect in chaotic rugby.
Mm-hmm.
So when chaos is there, man, the other team's in despair. You know,
you got to put that on a t-shirt. That's good stuff.
So I think what the Waratahs need to do is they need to stay controlled. They need to stay disciplined. And you know, rugby's not perfect. There's going to be some calls that may not go your way. So you just need to stay on top of that. Get back that 10. Really set that line. If they can do that early and just have a strong defensive effort in that first half, it'll be a bit of a blowout, I think, for the Waratahs. I think they're too fast, too strong, but they need to remain disciplined and they need to make sure that they don't overcommit at these rucks. You know, the Drua are really, really good at one or two going in and getting quick ruck play. If that happens and they're overcommitting three or four, then, you know, you're sort of leaving yourself out to dry a little bit in that AB channel. So I think stay disciplined. Don't let the Drua play chaos. The Drua are going to come out and try to physically impose themselves on the game. And I just think that if the Waratahs can stay composed, get in some good first up hits, some good first up defensive tackles, then we should be watching a Waratahs go straight into that grand final quite convincingly.
No, I think I agree with you. I think with both teams, they've got some incredible backs. They've obviously, with the Fijian team, like the offload game is just natural to them.
Yeah.
But I think, once again, I think the deciding factor is going to come down to their forward pack. And I think particularly for this matchup, it's going to be the front row and then how they use their subs. For me, I was impressed with Natalie Delamere, I think is how you pronounce her last name, who's a recent import from New Zealand, previously played for the Black Ferns and Matatu in the Super Rugby Opiki. I think she's going to provide a lot to the, how this team is going to go. She's been impressing the crap out of me. And I, like I said previously, I think Tawake, she's just got such a good engine, and she's got to keep that discipline. But I think if she's on a roll, she's away.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. That's what it's going to be. You know, if the Waratahs can play express rugby, well, like they have been all season, which is why, you know, you look at their for and against, you know, their wins are coming because, and they're scoring because that forward pack are very agile and mobile, and their bench is disgustingly stacked. And I dare say they're probably the only team that have in the Super W that can look to their bench and know that, you know, for all intents and purposes, the finishers coming on are actually... they're going to finish.
They're going to do the job.
Yeah. So, you know, not to take anything away from the duo, because like I said, if chaos is in the air, you know, the Waratahs will be in despair. But I just don't think I've seen enough teams disrupt the Waratahs for it to start this weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, trademark that slogan, and then we're going to head over the ditch. And
let Mate, you know what's going to happen? Oh, Pig Athletic Club are going to steal it, put it on a T-shirt.
And then we're going to try and do the same and be like, nah, we're going to sue you for that.
So Money, I'm looking at you, mate. Don't you dare.
Let's head over the ditch, though, and let's chat Super Rugby Pacific, because we're now heading into round 10 of the Super Rugby Pacific competition. And Chiefs still undefeated, man. It's their...
They're knocking on the greatest season of all time in Super Rugby. They're knocking on that door.
What, 2013?
Of course.
Which one? Which one are you talking about?
When the Crusaders went through not 2013, 2000. They went like it was Super 12. That they went like 11-1.
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking about the last time the Chiefs went undefeated. It was in 2013, and they ended up winning the title. It was under Dave Rennie. So
under Dave Rennie, that's right.
Yeah. So they've obviously got a very formidable opponent this weekend. You spoke about them just now as the Crusaders, but they haven't got off to the best start. But anybody that writes the Crusaders off is an idiot, in my opinion. But
I mean, they're sitting third, dude. Like, they're trash.
People are sitting there going, oh, man, yeah, they're not going to win it this year. Rays is already halfway out the door. And I was like, have you ever watched a Crusaders season before?
Silly billies.
But I do think you bring up a good point. Is I think that one of the greatest rivalries in Super Rugby is the Chiefs and the Crusaders. And like we said, in 2013, Dave Rennie relished this matchup. He was painting the Chiefs as the outsiders who were continually overlooked by all the ex-Crusaders and influential positions at New Zealand Rugby. And I know guys like Brody Retallick and other veteran players, they're most physical when they're playing this team. So I think it's going to be a great matchup regardless. What are you excited most about this matchup?
Richie Moonga? Because that kid's been impressing me. I'm like, damn, bro. So just to see him against this back line, just to see what he's going to do is what excites me. Look, I'm split down the middle with how this can go. I think it's just going to be which team comes to the game best prepared and ready to execute. But I do think if Richie Moong is on, it's going to be a tough day. But I don't know, man. We'll just see. The Chiefs are just, you know, they what they've done this season is they've overcome adversity in some of their games and really come home. I think if they let the Crusaders get a little too far in front, I don't know they can sniff them out because it's the Crusaders. Having said that, they've proven that they can do it to every other team this season. So I'm really interested. And like, look, the battle of the forwards. Gosh, golly. Yeah,
it's going to be ridiculous.
The lineouts? Oh!
Yeah. if you've got, who is it? Scott Barrett and Sam Whitelock in the locks, and then you've got Retallick, and then actually it doesn't really matter who they put in there, Arcoy or yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who they play at in the. But I think the back three is going to be the interesting battle as well as if you've got. It's going to be interesting.
This could be the greatest Super Rugby match we're seeing this season.
I reckon. I think so. But yeah. I want to chat a little bit deeper because you brought up Richie Moonga about the fly half battle. a lot of people are saying that Damian McKenzie, based on form, is doing enough in this position to earn the starting spot for the All Blacks. But I think others are saying this is still Richie's team. We're going to see how they go head-to-head this weekend. But if you were picking on form, would you pick Mwanga or would you pick McKenzie for that starting fly half?
It depends who's 12. If it's Harvilli, I'm picking Richie.
Okay. So this is what I was talking about. We were talking to our good mate, Ollie, aka Penny, over the weekend in Santa Monica over a couple of drinks, and we were sitting there, we were going, okay, who would you say would get the nod? And we were both getting goosebumps because we were talking about Damian McKenzie at 10, and then you've got Geordie at 12, you've got Rico at 13, and then you've got Sean Stevenson at fullback.
Mm-hmm.
I was just sitting there just going, oh,
yep.
Man, this is amazing. But, yeah, it's – I do agree with you. It does depend on who you've got at 12, because if you've got Richie, who's an out and out 10, and then you've got Harvilli, who's got the kicking game, and then you've got his style of play, I think those two blend really well. Yeah. It's all going to be about combinations.
And I think it'll come down to combos. I think, look, personally, I think, it's easy to say that McKenzie's the form 10 when his team's undefeated. Mm-hmm. I think what we've seen from Richie though, is I personally think he's just a little bit, a step above him at the moment, just in regards to the slickness of what he's doing. Do you know what I mean? He's really talking about delaying a pass or pushing the pass, and it looks very natural. Mm-hmm. I don't know that McKenzie under pressure, I'm talking about when you've got, some Springboks running at you or an Irish back row or a French back row running at you.
Yeah.
That he can handle that. Whereas I think Richie can, and I think Richie's kicking game, in-game kicking game, is superior at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I think looking into the World Cup, when we start playing these Northern Hemisphere teams, which love to put that pressure on, maybe Richie at 10 would be the better option, just purely off his... he's got that Stephen Larkham relaxed... but with Andrew Merton's kicking game at the moment, and it's just like, oh, like that's something. And I think his ball handling, his game control and game management's just as good, but that's what tipped me over the line. And then you put Harvilli there at 12, which I think he's having a really great season at the moment. But then it's like the Barrett brother. It's just like, I just don't know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Hey, the answer's coming to Papa.
Well, I think that's going to come down, because I think that Damian McKenzie is probably the best bench player we can have, who can cover multiple positions. But that's the thing. You've also got Bodie. He can play fullback. He can play fly half, depending on injuries or just relieving people in the game. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's all going to come down. We're going to see how it happens at the end of the season, how Fozzie wants to go with it. But
we could see an All Black side with three benched Barrett brothers.
Ooh.
This season.
That's very true. Yeah, because I think if you think about it, Scott has obviously had a cracker of a season last season playing six and playing lock, but he can cover multiple positions, as he's been shown. If we can find, like, say, Shannon Frizzell or because Akira's injured, maybe like a Luke Jacobson at six, so he could come off the bench. Geordie could come off the bench and cover multiple positions. Bowden can come off the bench. Oh, man. That's
– what? Can you imagine playing the All Blacks and then there's three reserves that come on and it's the Barrett brothers with 20 minutes, 25 minutes to go?
Oh, man.
Hey, good night. I'll see you later. I'll see you later. I'll be checking out. I'll be like, you know what? I'm here. I'm cool, man. Coach, my knee's done. I'm out. I can't walk. My back is broke. I broke with my back.
Oh, I'm speechless now. That's ridiculous. if that actually happens in a test match, oh my God. Yeah, that's – I don't even know what to say to that.
Mate, oh my God. It's like watching The Expendables 3. You're just like, wait, how are you all here?
There's too many people. How did they afford all of this?
Yeah, wait, the diehard guy, the Terminator? Who's the guy in the forest? Do you know what I'm saying? Rocky's here? What do you mean?
All right, so I'm not speechless for the rest of the podcast. Let's chat about two other players so I can get around this outside back conundrum we also have potentially for the All Blacks. So we've got Sean Stephenson, who's currently playing out of his skin, and especially with Will Jordan not in the mix and not able to get the reps, he's making a good argument to at least get picked in this All Black squad. And also Amani Narawa, both having incredible seasons so far for the Chiefs. Ian Foster's come out publicly this week, and he said that a lot of the other All Black outside backs, they're not up to snuff. They need to improve, and they're doing a great job. So, just in your opinion, do you think that Sean and Amani have done enough to get a spot in the first All Black squad of 2023, or do you think they'll get guys with experience?
100%. Look, here's the thing. I think the All Blacks and their coaching staff know they can't go into this World Cup with the same olds. I think we've seen some standout breakout seasons. Those two are definitely at the top of that list. Mm-hmm. Sean Stephenson, like, bro.
He's killing it.
But, like, how do you look like you're not sweating and running slow, but you're not, and you're awesome?
Yeah.
Like, dude, like, yeah, they 100%, 100%. And, like, who are you going to say that's played better than them this season? Do you know what I mean? On a very real level, like their seasons, their stats are disgusting too. Like averaging 130-140 meters per game, like post advantage line. Those are insane numbers. It's not like they're running the length of the field, you know, once a game. Do you know what I mean?
I think the only thing they've been wanting to say is he needs to fix his consistency, and that's for both players. And they've come out and they've just done it week after week after week. And there's now you can't. The argument's made is like if they are continuing to show this, you've got to reward people based on form.
100%.
Okay. All right. Quick pick. Crusaders or Chiefs?
Oh, dude, my heart says Chiefs. My head is leaning Crusaders, but I haven't made my final decision.
All right. We'll chat about it later in the week. But I know.
I'm not betting on it. Let me just say that.
Be like the odds are too close. It's not going to be worth
it. It's not worth my $3,000. I mean, $30.
Depending on how confident you are. Okay, yeah. Exactly
right. It depends. All right, hold on. It depends how many beers I have before the game starts.
That's a good point. Yeah. If it's one or two, you're sitting there going, $30. If it's past six, then you're going, yep, mate, rent check. It's gone. Yeah,
won't be the first time this season.
All right, let's move on to our third topic because we're talking everything Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. He's hasn't given up his World Cup dreams, but he's not going to be here next season playing the 15-man game. So he spoke about how he's going to be moving on to the New Zealand Warriors in 2024 on a three-year deal. So it does kind of show you because of his track record with COVID injuries and obviously just quality of rivals in his position. It does kind of show you the writing on the wall that he's kind of leaning towards. I've got to find a better decision or a better situation for me. He's still an outstanding athlete in football. I think he had a great run for what he was provided in the position that he had to learn. And also trying to do it in Super Rugby. I think that is really good. And he did his job that he came to do. He made the All Blacks and no matter what happens, but the writing's on the wall. He's heading to NRL. And I think the fact that he's got Jordy Barrett, David Harvili, Anton Lennett-Brown, Jack Goodhue, those guys in competition for that number 12 spot. And considering he hasn't had much experience playing any other positions except a couple of games in NPC and Super Rugby, It's gonna be tough for him to get into that World Cup squad. So, do you think it was the right decision for him to make?
I think at that point in time, I mean, he was the best rugby league player on the planet. You know, no one's gonna argue that. He came from a rugby background. He was very, very, very good at it at schoolboy level. But I think you know, to sort of throw some rugby league commentators' chat back at them. You can't make it. People like Sonny Bill Williams, Wendell Saylor, Matt Rogers, those are special, special players that came across with a special skill set at a special time. What we're seeing now is the modern game has changed and the athlete has changed too. So while Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is a great center, implementing what he learned in rugby league into a game that doesn't stop for 80 minutes, you know, you're not going to have those, you know, those one-on-one moments where you get to just shine. You don't just need to get over the advantage line. You need to work post. And I think what that showed was is that this game isn't made for everybody. And you know, that's saying a lot. Yeah, I think, look, at the point of time, I think he made the best decision he thought possible. But yeah, mate, not everyone can come play rugby, no matter how good you are in another sport. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's that, you know. And I think too, you know, you look at the career of someone like Israel Folau, who's probably the best, most successful convert rugby league to rugby union has seen.
Yeah.
You look what he bought. Like, he was fast. He did have ball handling skills. He learnt to kick. He was great under the high ball. Do you know what I mean? One-on-one, he was pretty untouchable. And it's like, so let's compare him to RTS. Do you know what I mean? Like, comparatively, you'd say Israel's still a far better football player. So I think, you know, to answer your long-winded, yes, I think he made the right decision at that point in time. And I definitely think he gave himself a little bit more credit than he should have in order to make it, because Bowden Barrett was still here, Wichimonga was still here, Goodhue was still here, AOB was still here. Yeah. So, you know, but obviously New Zealand Rugby Union saw something too. Yeah. But I think New Zealand Rugby Union got the better end of this deal. I'll say so that.
I think I agree with you on some points. I think the question I do want to ask you is, do you think that the Blues signing him as a 12, which is probably one of the hardest positions to learn, especially at Super Rugby level, even though he has the experience, was a mistake, and he should have probably started on the wing? I don't know if fullback would have been the position, because he didn't have I don't know specifically if he would have had the kicking game to like play the return game and do that stuff. But do you think that signing him at 12 versus the wing was the wrong idea? Because I feel like he is a player that is always able to make something out of nothing, but if he has time. With 12, you don't have a lot of time, especially if you want to play a flat attack.
Well, here's the thing. I think on a business level, you're not signing someone for the amount of money that they did to throw him on the wing. And I think 12 would have been his best way to get into the All Black squad in regards to what he needed to learn skill set wise. I don't think his progression would have been what we saw. But I will say, I just don't think he deserved to be in the All Blacks at all. I don't think he did enough. I think that we're just lucky there was a fair few injuries at some point during his career in the last few years. I don't know that putting him to wing would have been the best for his upskill. I also don't think business-wise New Zealand Rugby Union would have let that happen.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. you know? Well, last
what,
one.
Well, hold on. What I will say is, if he stuck around, I think we could see a better Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and I think his career would last a lot longer post, you know, prime time than it will going back to rugby league. 100%.
So that was going to be my last question: is how successful do you think he's going to be at rugby league? Because I think he's still a phenomenal athlete. But you look at, I think the only thing that's going for him is, like, even though the Warriors are playing quite well, I think at that particular position, he's going to have some grace. But I think coming back into NRL, it's going to be tough for him to convert back.
Look at the best players in those back three positions; they're all under 20. Like, and there's a reason for that. And they're also taller. They're also faster. He's not a spring chicken anymore. So unless he can make a dramatic increase in skills for his kicking game and they push him to six, like I said, I think that 3-year deal is, and then that'll be it. And maybe, you know, maybe go to Japan or something, or French D2 rugby if he's still, because he'll still be fit enough. So yeah. I don't think it's a smart career move for his behalf. I think sticking around probably would have done him a lot more better financially. You know, coming from a New Zealand, playing Super Rugby for a Kiwi club, you can go anywhere in the world and make very good money and have a successful post-prime career. going back to the Warriors to rugby league, I think you're limiting yourself. And what, go to Super League maybe, make some money there, which is great. But, you know, it could be proven wrong too. He's a great athlete, a great player. You know, he's sort of reminiscent of Sonny Bill, where he'll just keep going because he's got the mental toughness. But I personally, if I was RTS, I'm not going back. Not at all. Okay.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, let's talk about the last topic, and that involves another league convert. Honestly, probably one of the people that has done it. You spoke about Israel Folau. He's done it probably the best. Brad Thorne, he's won championships for both league and union.
He's the greatest football player of all time.
You reckon?
100%, hands down.
I mean, I'm not gonna argue on it with semantics.
I'm not backing down that. He's literally done it all.
I think he has done it all, and I think he's a talented specimen when he's on the field. But yeah, oh man, that's a I've heard that claim be said before.
I'm just saying, if you've won it all, that's in your prime, like, I'm just saying, bro.
He's got a very convincing argument. But let's talk about it, because they did win a Super Rugby AU title in 2021. I know COVID was involved, and I know a lot of other things happened. He came here in 2018. He says that he loved the past six seasons. He says the job's not finished. They've got six games left and then the finals, and they've got a plan when they get to the finals, even though they're struggling a bit. Do you think that it was a successful coaching career with the Reds, with Brad Thorne?
100%, because it's not just the Reds. It's what he did prior to joining the Reds. The reason why the Reds are successful is because he was Queensland country coach, because he was in those premier games looking, learning. He was at Colts games. He was recruiting. He was doing the academy stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was hands-on. He was a hands-on coach before being appointed. He did. He learned to be an assistant coach. He learned how the Reds worked, and then used that experience to get the best team possible. Like, I mean, the post Richard Graham getting Nella to bowl, like, Nella would have gone ages ago. That's why he's gone to Melbourne. Thorne's gone. You know, like, this is all the reason. This is the brilliance that is Brad Thorne as a coach. Very successful and highly decorated, in my opinion.
No, I agree. He's definitely done a lot. You spoke about a lot of the things that he did. A lot of coaches could have easily gone down to a couple of club games and then just found other scouts and gone out to find the next player to play for the Reds. And you do make some great points, as he went out and he tried to do as much as possible to get that young crop of talent and really nurture and develop them in that system.
Yeah, 100%. And like, that takes a special coach to have that vision and that drive. It takes an extra special coach to be able to convince those kids to stick around at a not so great time and dedicate themselves to that maroon jersey.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I've got a few names I want to throw out to you, because everyone's kind of throwing in their little pebbles to say who the next person to replace him is. So we've got one, Robbie Deans, probably very unlikely, but a lot of people are saying that they regard him as a dream candidate. They'll have to afford him first, but that'll be one.
Right.
Vern Cotter, he's won titles with Deans with the Crusaders as a forwards coach in 2005, 2006. I think he's currently coaching Clermont. Matt Taylor, I know he's coached in 2011 in Super Rugby. Dave Rennie, I don't think there's any way he's going from Wallabies to go coach the Reds. I think he might be linked with the Blues and trying to do that, or heading over to Japan and just getting away from the Pacific in general and making that money. And I think there is one more that probably could be a realistic one, is Jason Gilmore. He's a Waratahs defense coach.
Yep.
And I think those are a handful of players. I know people are throwing out Laurie Fisher, but he said he's cutting back on full-time coaching. Someone made a random one saying Ben Teo, who's currently the Dolphins NRL contact coach. Yeah. There's no way I think he's getting it.
I'll tell you who I think it is. Queensland himself, Mick Heenan, Brass.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think his resume speaks for himself. They've put him in there this year to learn under Brad. And I think the investment the Reds would make into McKinnon is the exact same one that they would have made with Brad 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this is a fella that's come through like the most successful club coach that's ever existed, essentially.
Yeah.
In Australian rugby. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think his rapport with grassroots rugby is highly respected. His approach to rugby is, you know, his rugby IQ and how he approaches rugby has been duplicated across multiple club levels, across multiple teams. And I think that would be a smart approach from the Reds, the faculty, to have a look at what he's done and bring him up through that system. Maybe another 2 years as an assistant coach and then you sort of bring in a bigwig, but, you know, if I was there, McKinnon would be at the top of my list right now to really bring that, especially with what, you know, you got to think about what's happening at Ballymore at the moment too. You know, that's going to be the new capital of Australian rugby. And how good would it be to, like, you know, the Queensland Reds being led out by, you know, the most successful club coach that we've seen with his hands, feet, head firmly rooted in grassroots rugby.
Yeah.
And pushing. So, you know, and with Eddie back too, I think there could be some big brother, little brother that could, Rugby Australia could work out as well. So Mick could learn a little, you know, a few of the things, but he would, that's who I think I would choose for the face and the future of Queensland rugby.
Well, I mean, it hasn't not been done in the, like, the near past. Like, you had Dan McKellar, who was, it was a very, yep. Successful club coach, any of the Brumbies. You've also got, obviously, Darren Coleman, aka DC, had a very different journey. He went from club coaching, came over here, and then went back over to the Waratahs. But you can see that those clubs are rewarding people that are doing the hard yards and
yep.
can that rapport. So yep. I think McKinnon, if they go with that route, I think it's definitely the way that it's been shown in recent past, and you can say we're rewarding you for your hard work. Yep. And I do agree with you. He does have that connection, and he's probably going to be able to do the same thing that Brad Thorne did, is push those new players in, develop them, and just keep them going.
I'd also bring in Manny Colmanolis as an assistant coach too. That's just my two cents, but, you know.
All right, give me your reasons why.
Mate, okay, you're talking about rugby development. This kid, you know, he's been grassroots, right? He came through the system, rugby league. One of the brightest stars, went to Union at Nudgee College, converted him. Ha ha, gotcha. had quite a career. I think coaching wise, though, he's very similar vein as McKinnon. And what he's done with the Reds girls this season, you can see their attack is just a lot more slick. You can see defensively they're a lot more stronger, I believe. You know, they've introduced the, you know, I would say introduced, but they're definitely using the two-player tackle a lot more, which, to Maddie's credit, is, you know, his bread and butter. So I think we've just seen, you know, a coach immerse himself from sevens into 15s, from, you know, youngins to high school. He's had a successful coaching career with Andrew Curtin, you know, coaching at Nudgee College, Padua, I believe, and St. Pat's. And I think, you know, when you get guys like that, you know, in the same vein as McKinnon that have been around grassroots and they're really building their career, you want someone like that that's young enough to bring and understand the culture, but also hold accountable these young lads and really, you know, be that sort of the liaison for upskilling and development while also, you know, almost that big brother type vibe, you know, but, you know, slap them across the ears and when you have to.
All right, you make some compelling arguments. I'll say that, but yeah, I knew we can't go an episode without you throwing some nudgy bias in there. But we'll round it out and we'll talk about.
Well, he's up to it, bro. He's up. I'm purely giving an unbiased opinion about what I think. Now,
I don't think that's possible with you.
If there are coincidences about who these opinions are about. Well, it's just purely coincidence, man. Rugby Australia is small. We're a small group of people, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about when we've got seven grades in each club. Yeah, that doesn't really make sense when it's a small group of people.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's round out this episode before we get into a state high nudgy debate, and we'll go through and we'll chat about the
yeah, but up the fills.
No, we're not bringing that up. We're not talking about that. Stay on task, all right? Hurricanes, Brumbies. Who you got?
Hurricanes, easy work.
Same here. Okay, so Waratahs, Highlanders.
Yeah, that's the bottom of the ladder. Look, Highlanders need to pull their finger out, so I hope that they get the job done just so it helps the Reds stay in the top eight.
I'm wearing my Randwick shirt today, so I'm going to back the Waratahs for this one. So,
he's sappy.
Blues, Fiji, and Drua.
Blues, easy work.
Yeah, that's fair. Moana Pacifica Rebels. Tell me this one is going to surprise me.
Completely biased. I would never back away from my boys. Up Moana.
Yeah, I'll back them too this weekend. Yeah, it'll be a good matchup. Chiefs versus Crusaders. We already spoke about it. You're on the fence. Are you ready to make a decision yet?
I am. I'm going to go Chiefs by three.
Ooh, okay. All right. Yeah, that'll be a tight one. I hope it is like that, because then yep. I'm on the edge of my seat. Last one, Reds Force.
If it does swing, Crusaders win, it'll be like three as well. I think that's sort of where
you reckon it'll be that close either way?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. Reds Force. This one's pretty easy.
Yeah, Reds.
I was like, man, surprise pick of the week that might go your way.
There's that $3,000, baby.
Oh my god.
Turn that into nine.
Yeah, no, it's not. Definitely not. There's no way. I love my boy Folletti, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, we love, bro, but yeah, no, it ain't happening, fam.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into the Bonus Point podcast. It was good to be back chatting Super Rugby Pacific with the bro. Be sure to check out my last episode with Arihana Marino Tohinu, current Black Fern and Super Rugby Opiki player with the Chiefs. Very good insight into the competition over in New Zealand and the amazing growth that is happening in the women's rugby department at the moment. And be sure to watch them on the Farrah Palmer Cup as well. But yeah, stay tuned, everyone. We've got some great guests coming up in the next few episodes coming up next month. A couple of Kiwis that are currently over in America. And then we've got also a former Super Rugby player currently playing over in South Africa who is just doing his thing, even though he's had such a storied career. So stay tuned for the episodes coming soon. Be sure to follow us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all that good stuff, and listen to our podcast on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your other podcasts. We'll see you soon, guys.